So as I've been talking about heroes and godly heroes, one of the significant factors, the first one that I pointed out was heroes and godly heroes are called by God. That's what I want to really focus in on this morning, is Moses' call by God. Some of the other factors of herodom, Moses at this stage is really missing out when it comes to faith and courage. You hear him and what Pat just read, you hear Moses saying, "Can't you find somebody else, God?" Which, honestly, is a common response and far too common, I'm sure, for God. He really is sending out a call. These are dire times, and he really does want to raise up some new heroes of the faith. Are we going to respond to that call? In Moses' time, it was a time of crisis. They were brutal times. In fact, if you're following your sermon notes, point two in the blank there is, it was a time of God-awful suffering. Just God-awful suffering. So when I finished up two Sundays ago with Joseph, the story of Joseph, hey, things were looking really good for Israel. They had gotten settled into Egypt, and they had been delivered out of this crisis, a famine that probably would have just killed off the whole family of Jacob and all of his sons and daughters and grandsons and granddaughters. And here they got settled into Egypt, and Joseph had been elevated to be the right-hand man of Pharaoh, the most powerful king in all the earth. And here's Joseph basically lord over the whole land. I mean, things are looking good. And they did. They settled into, literally it says, the best part of the land of Egypt. Well, then Exodus starts. In chapter 1, you find out that a number of generations pass by, and great things are happening in the Israelite community. I mean, they're multiplying like rabbits and becoming very populous here in Egypt, and things are going very well for them, but all of a sudden the Egyptians are starting to get concerned because these foreigners are starting to overpopulate in their land. And so Pharaoh says, "I'm getting worried about these Israelites because, you know, what would happen if all of a sudden we have a crisis with one of our enemies and they decide to side with our enemies? We could have big problems. Here's what we're going to do. We need to keep them under our boot. So let's enslave them." So he assigned a bunch of slave masters over them and says that the Hebrews, all of a sudden, they were very instrumental in building up some of these important cities there in Egypt. But it explains that, and it uses language like this. It was oppression. It was forced labor. It was ruthless. It was bitter and hard labor. They were ruthless towards the Israelites. So you can imagine now that they are slaves. I mean, this Pharaoh, had no clue, didn't even understand what Joseph had done to deliver all of Egypt, didn't care. All he knew was this was a problem. I mean, let's see, can you imagine this? If all of a sudden, all right, Felipe, where are you at? Felipe. Anyway, is it Felipe here? I thought I saw Felipe. Okay, Felipe, our dear brother, one of our elders, Mexican descent. There he is. I just needed a hand. So, you know, what if we just said, man, you know this Mexican problem we're having, all these Mexicans coming in? Here's what we need to do. We need to just put them into forced labor. I mean, to that, it sounds crazy to us, right? Felipe, how can we do that with friends of ours and everything? But this was just kind of the psychotic mindset of Pharaoh. It got worse. Because despite all this forced labor, hard work, oppression, ruthlessness, they just continue to multiply. They continued to grow. Their population continued to grow. He decides, this is just sick. All right, let's just start killing off all the boy babies. Girl babies, that's fine. They can live. Boy Israelites, as soon as they're born, kill them. Is that just demented or what? But that's what Pharaoh determined to do. Set out to do it. Gave the orders to the Hebrew midwives. As soon as you see the baby birth, you know, if it's a boy, destroy the little boy. Of course, the Hebrew midwives disobeyed him because it says in the scripture they feared God. They feared God more than they feared Pharaoh, and they knew what Pharaoh was asking was outright evil. And so they didn't do it. So there's some heroes there too. There's a number of heroes in this story. People who, can you imagine that, standing up against the word of the king? Anyway, so this is the context. This is what's going on. And all of a sudden, here comes this little beautiful baby boy born to a couple of Levites. Beautiful little baby. And that mom just could not even imagine then destroying this little child. So she hit him successfully for 3 months. She hit him, but moms, you know how babies can be. They're kind of hard to hide. All of a sudden, they cry out. Right? So after about 3 months, she comes up with this plan. And you can only imagine the desperation of this mom. Came up with this plan. Got a papyrus basket and coated it with pitch. Put the baby in it. Moms, can you imagine then putting this basket with your baby boy in the Nile River and sending it down? On a hope and a prayer. It must have been just heart-wrenching for this woman. But I think there was this faith, at least the size of a mustard seed, maybe even bigger than that. What was she thinking? What was she praying? What was she hoping? Well, here's how God got involved. So as that's floating down the river, and the older sister of the baby is following along in the reeds, following along, looking and seeing what's going to happen. Lo and behold, as it floats down, here comes Pharaoh's daughter coming down to the Nile River to bathe. And she comes down with her attendants. She spots this basket and asks some of her servant girls to go and fetch it, brings it to her, opens it up. Here's this adorable little baby boy. Is it not just pure irony? This story is just so cool. Pure irony that the person who would save the baby from Pharaoh would be who? Pharaoh's own daughter. And she says, oh, this must be one of the little Hebrew boys. Her heart melts. Here comes this little girl. And she says, ma'am, it's Moses' older sister. Ma'am, would you like me to find somebody who can nurse the baby for you? I got to figure, the Pharaoh's daughter understood. She knew what was going on. She says, yes, why don't you go get me a nursemaid? So the little sister runs off, gets her mom, brings her mom back, presents her mom to Pharaoh's daughter, and Pharaoh's daughter, get this, not only says, I want you to take care of this baby for me, and I will pay you to do it. Is that not so cool? Is that not God? Have you ever had an experience where God so turned things around and came through in spades? Just almost poetic spiritual irony going on. I'll bet if we went around the room, we could come up with some pretty cool stories about God coming through in those tremendous ways. But point three was, hope came in the form of a baby. And isn't that typical of God? Did it with Samuel? Did it with John the Baptist? Did it with Jesus? What's this with God with babies? He just loves babies, doesn't he? Hope came in the form of a baby. But then, as Moses grew, and it's interesting too, Moses lived to be 120 years, right? And his life can pretty much be divided up into 40 years growing up in Pharaoh's household, 40 years in exile, and then 40 years leading Israel. Those first 80 years are all summed up in one chapter in Exodus 2. And then the next 40 years of his life take another 135 chapters to tell. The rest of Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. So some of you who, you know, are about two-thirds of the way through your normal life expectancy, and we're starting to feel like I'm a year away from 50, so I feel like I'm kind of in that camp. We're starting to feel like, wow, the best of our years may be behind us. Not from God's perspective. Because with Moses, things really didn't even get started until he was 80 years old, right? So as I wrote to some of you recently, don't think retirement, think refirement. All right? So Moses, though, now he's about 40 years old. He's grown up as a prince of Egypt. I mean, he's grown up in Pharaoh's household. He's got life in a grandiose style by the hand, right? But he grew up knowing that he was Hebrew, knowing that he was an Israelite. And there's, I think, too, within him kind of that sense, that inkling that he's responsible. He needs to do something about this oppression to the Israelites. And guys, maybe you're with me. When you just see an injustice, and especially when you feel a connection with that person that's just being ruthlessly just dealt with, there's just, and that anger builds up in you. Sometimes there's just something you want to do about it. That was Moses. He comes out one day, about 40 years old, and he sees this slave master just beating one of the Israelite slaves. Moses just gets on fire. Looks around. I don't know exactly, didn't tell exactly how it happens. But he gets that Egyptian slave master alone and doesn't just beat the tar out of him, kills him. Outright kills him. What? Moses, man of God, biggest hero of the Old Testament, he was a murderer? Yeah. Interesting, despite our sins and failures, still how God can redeem our lives and do more than redeem them. He can just do powerful, wonderful things when we get in line with God. Problem with Moses was, it wasn't even that he killed somebody. I mean, David killed Goliath, right? But that was something that was, the spirit was in David, definitely in David, and David did that spirit-led, and that was of God. With Moses, the case was misguided zeal. Point number four, his misguided zeal. So, you know, it says later on in the New Testament that the anger of man doesn't always bring about the righteousness of God. We got to watch out for our anger. We got to be careful, because if it gets out of hand, it can lead to bad things. In Moses' case, all of a sudden next day, he realizes, he finds out that it's been found out that he killed one of these Egyptians, and it gets all the way to Pharaoh. The Pharaoh's spitting mad. My adopted son or not, I will kill you. So Moses has to flee for his life, flees all the way to Midian, far away. Long story short, in fact, long story very short, he gets settled there in Midian, ends up living with this household, this family, headed by Jethro. Jethro lets him marry one of his daughters, and now he's a shepherd. He has gone from Prince of Egypt to shepherddom, which in those times was basically one of the lowest jobs you could ever have or think of. He knew highs, he knew lows. So here's Moses, living in exile. And things are not, things are all right, but not looking that great. And then one day, point five, God calls Moses. God calls Moses. Here's how it happened. He is out tending a sheep in Mount Horeb, I think it was, mountain of God. Sheep are grazing there, and all of a sudden he looks up, and there's a bush that's burning. It's on fire, and as he goes to look at it, he's bewildered because this bush is on fire, but it's not being consumed. And so as he draws near, he's trying to check this out, a voice booms out of this fiery bush. Moses, Moses. All right, and this is the passage that Pat read us. And so it's God calling Moses. And God basically explains to Moses what he's about, what his intentions are. He's seen the suffering and oppression of his people, the Israelites in Egypt, and he is going to do something about it, and he is sending you, Moses, to be his spokesperson, to be his point man. And Moses' first response is, who am I? I don't think you got the right guy. And then later on, as the story goes on, I mean, there's about three different times, Moses is trying to get out of this. He's desperate. Please send somebody else. At one point, it actually says that God's anger burned against Moses. You don't find Moses at this stage, like I said, being very courageous, being very faith-filled or faithful. That would come. He would grow into that. But with all kinds of fear and trepidation. Because the assignment God's giving him appears to be a suicide mission. Are you kidding? That's why I'm here. I'm in exile because they were seeking my life. Yeah, it's a new Pharaoh on the throne, but still, to march into Pharaoh's throne room, go before him and say, hey, got a message from our God, not your God, our God, and he wants you to let our people go. About 3 million of us. We're just going to go. And Pharaoh would be scratching his head going, this could be highly devastating to our whole economic system, and besides which, I don't even like you people, so why would I do that? Suicide mission, right? What are you thinking, God? Send someone else. You know, when God calls, don't be surprised if the task he is asking of is crazy from our perspective. I mean, from God's perspective, God knows that he's got all these supernatural resources that he can bring to bear. That's what we have to remember. All of heaven's resources are on our side when we're walking with God. And so the point of Moses' calling too was he tried by his own hands to see if he could help the Israelites, and it failed miserably. But he had to wait. You have to wait for God's calling, because the calling is all about God's purpose, not yours, not your way, the way you would do things, but the way God will do things. It's all about his purpose, and in the call comes the promise that God will be with you. And that's the most significant part of that chapter 3 in Moses' calling, was God promising his presence. I will be present with you. And if God is for us, who can be against us? So some of us, we need to wait for that calling. But that call is going out. I mean, these were god-awful times back then. Oh, hey, you know, thank goodness. I mean, evolution, right? Well, we've so evolved. We're such a civil, you know, people now. Slavery? Oh, no, that was abolished back in, what, 1865, Abraham Lincoln, right? Right? Oh, no, it comes by a different title now. They call it human trafficking. And a lot of human trafficking is about women and children being pushed into the sex industry. It's sick. You think times were barbaric back then? Oh, but thank God we don't kill babies like that. Really? Really? Yeah. No. Oh, yeah, that abortion system. Well, that, you know. For such a time as this, in the barbaric times we live in, God is calling out for heroes. And heroes, in some cases, it's doing little things that have massive results. So we got a neighbor here. Ethel told me last night, sorry to point you out, Ethel, but anyway, she helps out with Pregnancy Resource Center. So those little things that she does, volunteering for Pregnancy Resource Center, could mean that many babies don't get aborted. I mean, maybe we can't completely change the whole system overnight, but little by little we can do those little things. Or I've got a friend that lives in Sweden that is taking on the human trafficking systems. And if that's where your heart and your passion is, that's where you need to go. Have you sensed God's calling? Maybe you're fuzzy on, is it God's calling? You know it's God's calling if you're passionate about it and it totally connects, intersects with this need, this deep need of the world. I think it was Frederick Buechner, I think I'm pronouncing his name right, who said, that's where you know where your calling is, when your deepest passion intersects with a very deep need. and you need to just take steps of faith, but it's too big, God. And then God says, I will be with you. That's God's presence. So the challenge is, take the steps of faith. Launch out, knowing, trusting, because of God's calling, you got God's promise, his promised presence. Go for it. Go for it. And God be with you. He will. He's promised. Amen.